way we can climb that," I said to my friend. We looked up Croagh Patrick, and it's 764 meters of steep, uneven rocks made more ominous by the mist, drizzle, and wind. We had no intention of making this pilgrimage of sorts when we started the day, and maybe we shouldn't do it. Over lunch in Westport, in Ireland's County Mayo, we decided that since we were so close, we really should try it. It was sunny, and we both liked to hike. Our guidebook said to plan on 4 hours to the top and back, but that experienced hikers could complete the trek in 2.5 hours. I read that 40,000 people make the hike each year, some in their bare feet. How hard could it be? It went from sunny to rainy in the 15 minutes it took us to drive to the Holy Mountain, nicknamed the Reek by locals due to its shape. Reading about a mountain is one thing. Standing at its base is another. The rain made this look both mysterious and difficult. Maybe we should just head to the next town on our list. "We are here, let's do it," my friend encouraged. We started walking toward the winding trail that looked like a meandering river from below. When we reached the statue of St. Patrick that marks the beginning of the pilgrimage, two people who were coming down off the mountain gave us their walking sticks. This was our first miracle. We wouldn't have gotten far without them. The climb was steeper and rockier than we had thought. "Hey there, lassies." An older Irishman approached us coming down from the mountain 20 minutes into our walk. "This is the fourth time I've climbed the Reek and only got halfway before I turned back and came down. It is wet and windy above. You shouldn't go up. Worst I've seen it." "Okay. We will go as far as we can and be safe. We don't need to reach the top," I assured the man. "That's right, all right with ye," he said as he left. 2 minutes later, we encountered a second old Irishman who gave us the same warning. I gave the same reply. He gave us more or less the same response of, "All right with you." My friend watched them leave and said to me, "Do you think those were leprechauns?" "Maybe," I sighed, looking at the climb ahead of us. "We should heed their warning. I don't know how high will be the right place to stop, but hopefully we will figure it out when we get there." My friend, who was younger than me, was also a lot faster. In another 20 minutes, she was quite a bit further than I was. I was content to walk slowly. This had become a true pilgrimage for me as I entered a conversation with God. "Am I in the right job?" There was no one around me. No one to think I was crazy talking to myself. Help me figure it out. This is Curious Planet, and I am Jacqueline Comito. "No way," I said to my older sister. "I am not going to be on that boat for its first ride of the summer." My thoughts had floated back to my father's boats, which had a habit of taking on water, whether it was the small styrofoam sailboat he had won because he smoked enough cool cigarettes, or the pontoon boats Mafia Queen 1 or 2. None of them were particularly reliable. Or maybe my father was not a reliable judge of pontoon boats. My earliest memories of water include either fishing or boating with my father. We didn't have a lot of money and often utilized our state or county parks, fishing at the rivers or swimming in the lakes. My resistance to the maiden summer ride came from the thought of being stuck in the middle of the lake as the pontoon slowly filled with water or the motor stopped working. There was no thought given to the water quality back in the 1970s. Now, I can't even look at water in Iowa without concerns for what's in it. I said aloud as my mind returned to the slope of Croagh-Patrick. By now, the rain was causing small creeks to flow down the mountain all around me. The water looked fresh, inviting, and clean. I was reminded of the first time I lived in Italy, and my cousins there asking me if we had good drinking water in the United States. They said they had heard on television that our water was no good. I was startled by that question. "Of course our water is good," I replied naively. Haven't I done this job long enough? This wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. Moments of my life involving water kept bubbling up in my heart as water streamed around me, making the hike up the mountain harder than it should have been. The walking stick steadied my steps. I recalled the day I took my kayak to Swan Lake, just outside my hometown in western Iowa. I hadn't been on the lake since I was a kid. Eagerly, I put my boat in, only to become depressed by the deep green color of the algae-infused water caused by excess nutrients that flowed into the man-made lake from the agricultural fields around it. Up ahead was a mother mallard and her five ducklings who called this lake home. I got off the lake quickly and knew it was better to appreciate it from afar. We had been hearing time and again from some farmers that the problem isn't what they are doing on their land. The problem is the monitoring of the water. When pushed too far on the issue, they would declare, "You like to eat, don't you?" suggesting that we couldn't grow food and have healthy waters. My work felt futile. Perhaps we went wrong by calling water a natural resource, right? That implies it's for humans to commodify, to control. "Water is life," I shouted to the rain. An hour into the walk, I was tired. A decade into my job, I was tired. "Sorry, I've been doing all the talking. It was time to listen and maybe catch up to my friend." All I could hear was the rain falling and the occasional sheep bleating. I looked down. We had hiked higher than the sheep. It was time to head back. "Be baptized again." "What?" I looked around for the voice. Or maybe a burning bush. Nope. There was just water everywhere. "Be baptized." It couldn't hurt, I thought. I caught up to my friend. She was almost to the first top of the mountain, a false summit of sorts. It was raining harder, and it was even windier up here. We agreed to start down. My friend hesitated. "I'm scared to go down," she said. "It is scary looking down. Why did you climb so high?" "Going down frightens me, but the climb was so exciting." "Take your time. I will go first so you can follow me." A few minutes later, a young man passed us coming off the mountain. "Yeah, good decision to head back," he said. "It was impossible to see anything on the top." "It was difficult, much harder than I expected." "What did you expect?" I asked. "No, I don't know. Easier. I mean, I don't know how people do it barefooted." As I watched him leave, I wondered how many things in life were like that. We wouldn't even try them if we realized how hard they would be. I was moving down the hill faster than my friend, so I looked for a spot to rest while I let her catch up. Ahead of me was a beautiful natural stream that must have originated from the top. If it hadn't been so chilly, I would have thought I was on a mountain in Hawaii. It was a small oasis among the harsher beauty of the Rocky Mountain. This would be the site of my baptism. as my friend approached, I said, "Hey, I know this sounds crazy, but could you baptize me?" "Huh?" She tipped her head slightly. "You don't need to say anything. Just put water over my head." She's used to me being weird, so she shrugged her shoulders, cupped her hands, and poured water over my head. She did it again, 3 times in total. In that moment, standing in a drizzle on Croagh-Patrick, baptized simply from a clear, cold stream, I met God in the water. I felt lighter. My friend and I walked on in silence. We had about 20 minutes left in the hike, and the hardest part was behind us. Just up ahead, we spotted a large plastic water bottle someone must have dropped. It hadn't been there when we went up. "Maybe it's a sign," I said. "Water and plastic. I'm doing the right job." "Let me carry it," she offered. "Nope. It's my job to carry it." We were the last two off the mountain that day. It was getting close to dusk. We were wet. We were happy. Water, marine biologist Wallace J. Nichols writes in his book Blue Mind, is elemental to human survival. Our brains are hardwired to respond positively to water, neurologically, psychologically, and emotionally. Water settles our minds, sharpens our senses, and puts us in more productive states. Being close to water can make us happier and calmer. Nichols documents how spending time on, in, and near bodies of water can make us more emotionally sound, more connected, and more successful in life, relationships, and work. We are in a global water crisis. Across the planet, life is impacted by water pollution, water scarcity, and flooding, all results of human choices. Our oceans are becoming too acidic due to excess warming. Don't worry, I'm not going to overwhelm you with the statistics, but they are grim. Since we are hardwired to water, could it be that what we do to water, we do to ourselves? The water is troubled for certain. Who's willing to wade in the water with me to make it good trouble?